Today is April 10th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 144, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm sick. Get the full story on anything you hear in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/AWR. If you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at awr@macobserver.com.
You know, Brian, even though you're sick, it's still good to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Thank you. You know, speaking of hearing my voice, you can listen to me on Twitter. Actually, yeah. you can read me on Twitter.
It's almost like listening to you, but with your eyes.
Right. That's a... TMO Brian at Twitter, TMOBRYAN.
And if you want to listen to me with your eyes, you can do that at Twitter as well. And my Twitter name is Jay Gamet, so that's J-G-A-M-E-T.
This is a sad week for me, Jeff.
Yeah, I know it is. And I'm sorry you're having a sad week.
Thanks, man. I know it actually probably sounds to a lot of our listeners like we're prepping for a joke. But unfortunately, I'm actually honest there. It was a sad week. My wife and I had to put our 11-year-old lab down this week.
You know, and I've met your dog before, and he was very cool.
He was a great dog. He was a wonderful dog, and he gave me many, many years of awesome companionship, and I'm very sad.
You know, he was trying to convince me that you guys weren't paying enough attention to him. I'm sure that's exactly what the look on his face meant when he put his head against my leg and demanded that I pet him.
That and the fact that we don't give him enough snacks.
Right. Oh, yeah, he made that very clear, too.
He did. Yeah, he's really good at making those kinds of things clear. Unfortunately, it wasn't true. He got plenty of attention and plenty of snacks. But... he has moved on to the great poop sniffing in the sky. I don't know.
You know, I guess for dogs, that's really what they want.
Probably. Yeah, we're going to miss him. His name was Chandler Bing or Miss Chandler Bong, as the case may be.
I can't help but laugh. I just love your dog's name.
Thanks, man. Thanks, and you were very supportive, so I appreciate it, and so does my wife.
Well, but you know, my office manager, Nightshade the cat, I know that it would just absolutely suck to lose her, so I feel your pain.
Yeah, Nightshade is just as cool a cat as Chandler was a dog.
Yeah, and I think Nightshade is doing just a bang up job managing the TMO Central Towers.
She's good at that. You know, the funny thing is, I wrote songs from Chandler's perspective. He had an entire band. I wanted to tweet from Chandler's perspective, but then as he was getting ill. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
Sure, but you did sing me at least one of Chandler's songs.
I did, yeah, when you were visiting.
Yeah.
It was good.
It was. So the next time anyone's visiting Brian, ask him to sing one of Chandler's songs.
Exactly. That's a great idea. Alrighty. Well, thank you folks for listening to me cry about my dog and... as I was saying earlier, life does move on, though, and we have a podcast to do.
We do.
So come sick or, well, yeah, come sick or whatever. Here we are.
Here we are. And you know, even though you are sick, like I said, it's great to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Apple topped Business Week's most innovative companies list again. Apple is giving away a $10,000 iTunes credit and a laptop to celebrate the billionth App Store download. iTunes Store Music is now DRM-free. The Nehalem-based Xserve was unveiled. .Mac homepages are going away, and Microsoft's latest ad shows off the Mac and fails to mention Windows.
Dope. Apple managed to land in the top position yet again on Business Week's annual list of most innovative companies. Business Week's top 50 most innovative companies list is in its fifth year, and so far Apple is the only company that's landed in the number one spot. Other companies' CEOs offered their take on Apple's position in the market, including McDonald's CEO James Skinner. He said, quote, "Apple moves faster than anyone in its industry with the ability to innovate quickly and constantly. And if it finds success, it never stays satisfied," unquote. Internet giant Google came in second place, and Toyota Motor took the third place slot. Rounding out the top five slots were Microsoft and Nintendo. Research in Motion, Apple's arch nemesis in the smartphone market, took eighth place. Chip maker Intel came in at number 33, and the popular social networking site Facebook was number 40.
And speaking of McDonald's, Apple's App Store is nearing the 1 billion download mark, and the company is celebrating with a countdown contest that will score one lucky winner, a $10,000, that's U.S. dollars, iTunes Store credit, a 17-inch MacBook Pro, a 32-gigabyte iPod Touch, a time capsule, and a McDonald's Big Mac, no special orders, after the 1 billionth app download happens. Users that aren't planning on downloading any apps can still have a chance at winning the big prize by filling out the entry form at Apple's website. Users can submit up to 25 entries a day. The 1 billion downloads contest runs from April 10th through the billionth app download. And I'm sure that Steve Jobs is just rolling over, well, not in his grave, I guess on his couch, at the prospect of us suggesting that Apple would give away Big Macs.
Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders don't upset us. All we ask is that you let us serve us your way. I think I messed up the melody there.
It was close enough, and I could totally picture the woman with that big boogie hat thing going on, standing behind the Burger King counter.
Right. All right, so moving on, Apple officially turned iTunes into a DRM-free zone, at least in terms of music, on April 7th. In a move intended to slow the growth of online digital music sales, Apple and the music industry began selling songs on iTunes with a multi-tier pricing scheme. With files unburdened by DRM restrictions, the labels had heretofore demanded. Songs will now be priced at either 69 cents, 99 cents, or better yet, $1.29, depending on how popular the labels deem the tracks to be. That's right, the labels in their infinite wisdom figured out that what their ailing and failing selves needed was a 30% price hike in the middle of a recession for their most popular tracks. Older songs will, in theory, be sold at the lower price, while most songs will, in theory, continue to be sold at the 99-cent price point. Said one music executive, "After shooting ourselves in the foot by squelching Napster and jacking up CD prices year after year, even while production costs plummeted, we figured the trifecta move would just have to be screwing the golden pooch that Steve gave us by charging even more for those digital downloads that really cost us next to nothing." Added another, do you know where I can invest in LimeWire or maybe, what's it called, BitTorrent? Silly.
Oh.
Jackals.
Brian, you really entertain me. Thank you.
Yay.
Apple updated the seemingly neglected Xserve line this week with new models based on Intel's Nehalem line of Xeon processors. The new units are available in 2.2 GHz speeds all the way up to 2.93 GHz in single or duo quad core processors and more memory and storage than you can shake a stick at. The XServe is Apple's line of rack mount servers aimed at enterprise, IT, higher education, and research installations.
Apple will be discontinuing its .Mac homepage feature on July 7th, 2009, according to notification that the company began sending out to MobileMe and .Mac customers. Quote, as of this date, you will no longer be able to create new pages or edit existing pages using homepage, the company said in an email. Any pages you've already published will remain live at the current web address for as long as you like. If you need to make changes to your existing pages, please do so before July 7th, unquote. Users will continue to be able to publish sites through iWeb to MobileMe or directly edit the HTML files hosted to your site's directory on your iDisk.
And Microsoft's third real-world PC shopping commercial is out, and this one features a mom and son, Lisa and Jackson, looking for a new laptop, and like the previous ads, continues to follow Microsoft's new marketing strategy, show off competitors' products, but fail to mention your own. The Lisa and Jackson ad follows in the footsteps of the Lauren and Giampaolo commercials by sending the two into a Best Buy store to shop for a PC. When the mom and son team pick out a PC laptop, Microsoft pays for it. The two check out the store's MacBook selection, which Lisa says is popular with her son's age group, and she ultimately dismisses the Macs as pretty but too expensive. And then, surprisingly, passes over a pink PC laptop in favor of a Sony Vaio. All three of Microsoft's new ads follow the same formula. Don't mention Windows and say that Macs cost too much, which means Microsoft is doing a better job at showing off other companies' products while giving its own the cold shoulder.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Go to
the audience seems to like that, too.
Yeah.
All right. That sound even... means it's time for the Context Machine, and that's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
That's exactly what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking we should start off with McDonald's. The App Store.
1 billion apps served.
Over a billion served.
That's what I always think of when I see Apple say that, as I think of McDonald's.
You know, I need you to do an on-location assignment for TMO, which is drive to Apple's Cupertino campus and see if there's golden arches there now.
I'll do that. You know, the last time I looked, there weren't any, but you know, they may have added some.
That's true. I mean, they have the technology, so they certainly could do that.
No, but it's amazing when you think about it. 1 billion apps downloaded. Now, most of those were free.
But right.
I mean, oh my God, that's just so many downloads. It's so many freaking downloads in such an incredibly short period of time. And there's only, I mean, there's a little more than 10 million of the things out in the wild.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
It's just amazing.
It is. Now, and this doesn't reduce the craziness of that number.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious how many of those are like first-time downloads, and how many of those are application updates? I don't know if Apple's counting those the same.
I don't know. I've never been able to figure this out. This is something we've mentioned every time we've talked about, you know, the number of App Store downloads. I am convinced without evidence that Apple is counting update downloads as a download.
Which, it wouldn't surprise me. But even if they are...
It's still crazy.
A buttload of app downloads.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. And the App Store is just, you know, when you think about, you know, folks, by the way, when we're doing level checks before we start recording, one of the things that I'll do is I'll say, just to see if I get a peek.
And just so you know, that's really, really true. Brian really does that.
It's totally true because it's one of the things that I do. I apologize. Anyway, what was I babbling about? I was babbling about
App Store, billion apps, buttload of apps.
Buttload. How many units are in the wild? I mean, the iPhone platform is you know, almost nascent. It's still at the beginnings. You know, we have. I personally think that we're going to get the iPod Super Touch, which is the name I've been giving to the notion of an iPhone netbook, an iPhone based netbook, some kind of larger device with a touchscreen that's based on iPhone OS, not Mac OS X. And you know, we've got, you know, I think that's going to be coming. We've got, you know, further improvements to the iPod Touch itself, further improvements to the iPhone. The company is probably eventually going to expand into the lower end of the market in terms of price to bring in yet more people. I mean, the iPhone platform is going to get substantially larger in the future, and we're already, in only a few short months of its existence, at 1 billion downloads.
Yeah, that's staggering.
It is staggering.
Now, of course, when I look at my iPhone, I think I've put a substantial dent into that number myself. Because I have like 8 screens packed with applications right now. And those are just the ones that are on my iPhone. The list that I have in iTunes is just ridiculous.
Right. And, you know, and Michael Johnston, our friend over at iPhone Alley, I'm sure is responsible for the other 900 million.
Probably. So, you know, I did my part, and then Michael picked up the slack for us. So go, Michael.
You know, I think that the App Store is just hugely important to Apple, and I think that they're going to, at least that they should, eventually expand it to cover Mac apps.
That seems like a natural extension of what they're doing.
It does. I mean, I'm not too keen on Apple having control over what gets published for computer software, and I don't think it could ever hold the same kind of control. Well, I mean, unless they close the Mac to third-party development that's not controlled by them, which I think would be a huge mistake. Right. It's never going to be as important to the Mac as the App Store is to the iPhone. But I think it would be a fantastic distribution channel for third-party developers who don't want to have to pay retail costs to get their product sold.
You know, it would make a great supplement to the channels that are already in place. And if I could purchase applications through Apple's App Store for my Mac, I'm certain that I would, because the convenience factor is very high, and especially after already being trained to use the App Store to buy things for my iPhone or my iPod Touch, right, and then buying music and then occasionally TV shows and other video things through the iTunes Store. I've been trained very well.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can train me, well, they can train anyone.
That said, there is a good counter argument to Apple not doing this, and that is that the iPhone is closed. Apple controls every single aspect of it, which makes ensuring how an application works pretty darn straightforward. You know, just about as straightforward as it can be, as a console game can be.
Right.
Right. It's a, you know, it's a closed system. Everyone knows exactly what they're doing. When it comes to Macs, there are so many more variables that would make it a lot harder for Apple to be responsible for how well a Mac application worked if it was sold through a Mac App Store.
Well, maybe the compromise would be that Apple distributes applications for the Super Touch.
Oh, they will. And they will do that for sure.
Yeah, so that would work. But, you know, if Apple did have a version of the App Store for the Mac, mm-hmm, and figured out how to make it work so that we didn't have to – so that it was easy, just like the App Store is.
Mm-hmm.
I could see people using that on a regular basis simply because of the convenience factor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it'd be a huge hit. It'd be a huge hit. It just, I think that a lot of people would balk at the kind of control. I mean, the whole issue with Apple being the gatekeeper at the iPhone for the App Store is, you know, it was kind of a new paradigm. It's, you know, it started off that way. It is what it is.
Right.
Apple taking that control, wresting that control away from the developers and the users for a Mac App Store might be a little bit harder for some people to swallow. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you're right, though. It would be a very difficult thing for developers and for end users alike to accept Apple having that much control over the applications that are being distributed for the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that genie is out of the bottle, so mm-hmm. they'd have to figure out some other way to make it palatable.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of genies... You like that one, don't you?
That counts as the best segue of the month.
Maybe you can explain it to our listeners.
Okay, so, well, first off, Brian just offered me just an immense level of entertainment with that, with his little speaking of Genie segue. He's actually referring to Jean McDonald.
Yay!
Yes.
The audience likes her.
Our entire audience should love her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, listen to that. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should. Everybody should.
Absolutely.
Everybody does.
And the people that don't love her, those are just the people that don't know her yet.
Exactly. Exactly. So tell us about Jean.
Okay, so Jean McDonald, she's a partner and also in charge of PR for Smile on My Mac Software, who, through no small coincidence, happens to be our sponsor this week.
Yay!
And just so everyone in our studio audience and those of you that are playing along at home know, when we sit here and wax poetic about Jean, we're not doing it because Smile on My Mac is our sponsor. We're doing it because Jean really is that great.
Yeah, she really is that great. Now, we're actually taking the time to mention it because she's our sponsor, but she's actually that great.
Yes.
The company is that great. They do good stuff. And they've been our sponsor for one of our sponsors for a long time. And I think this week, Text Expander is what they're sponsoring us with.
Yes. Now I use Text Expander every single day. And I won't even bother to ask if you're using it, Brian, because I use it, and that's good enough for me.
You know, I actually don't, so I'm going to let you take the lead on this one.
Okay, so for those of you that aren't familiar with Text Expander, it's an application that lets you take what Smile on My Mac calls snippets, which are collections of words or phrases, or they can be scripts, they can be graphics, and then you assign little shortcuts or abbreviations to those snippets. And when you type that abbreviation in pretty much any application, then it automatically expands out to that word or phrase or whatever it is that you had assigned to that little shortcut. And for me, this is a huge time saver every single day. I end up using this as an example, when people want me to give them contact information, I have a snippet set up. So all I have to do is type in my little four character shortcut, and then it just automatically fills all that information in whatever application I'm using. And for people that follow me on Twitter, when they see a link that I include in a tweet, it's always a tiny URL, or typically a tiny URL shortened version of a URL so that I can save characters. And I'm actually using an Apple script through Text Expander to take the URL that I have on the clipboard and convert it into a tiny URL and then paste it into my Twitter comment.
That makes sense. The Text Expander is one of those things that I should be using, but I just haven't yet. But yeah, everything. So let me ask you this, Jeff. Do you use this because they sponsor us?
No, actually, I was using this before they were sponsoring us.
I knew the answer to that.
Yeah.
I thought we should say it.
Yeah, so that was a great leading question. And actually, used Text Expander products, there are other applications I have also, for a long time. I was using Smile on My Mac products before I was writing for TMO.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. And the really cool thing is we'll finish up our little sponsorship ad here is they're doing a discount for our readers that's good through April 15th. And Text Expander is regular $29.95, and it's $23.96 through this. You'll find discounts on all the other products that they have, too, if you go to smileonmymac.com/AWR. You'll find that link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And there's good discounts on everything. PDF Pen, PDF Pen Pro, Page Sender, Disk Label, Text Expander, and BrowseBack. Thanks, Gene.
Thanks, Gene. You rock.
Yep.
Yep.
Next.
Next. How about the Microsoft ads?
Microsoft ads. You know, they're a mix of brilliance and what the huh?
I think that counts as the best description of those commercials that I've heard so far.
So let's look at the good. They certainly have gotten people talking, and the blogosphere is all the rage about it. But I think that even non-bloggy techie people are at least paying attention to this. But yes. And so I think that they do, I think, make a good case for PCs being cheap pieces of crap.
Yeah, I think they do a great job of that.
I mean, by which I mean, I think that they very much put Apple's Mac product line in the position of being the unattainable, the what you aspire to.
Right, and then the PC products that you buy are simply what you settle for.
Right. You know, and maybe that is what they're trying to do, you know, from the standpoint of a recession. I don't think it's working. I mean, by everything that we've gotten ahead of time, it looks like Apple's Mac and iPhone sales are going to have been just fine this quarter, this recession quarter.
Right.
So I don't know, man. I mean, it's weird. I don't understand why it is that they heap as much praise, even if it's backhanded compliments. You know, this looks great. Oh, this is sexy. Popular in his age group. Of course, that might have been a sort of thing to make it seem like, you know, only children would want a Mac. I don't really know what the point of including that line was in the new ad. But I don't know, man. They're just like I say. They're making the Macs be what you aspire to, what you can get if you can.
Yeah, and let's see. The first ad, that was the Lauren ad. She says that she just isn't cool enough to have a Mac.
Right.
And and then the Giampaolo ad. He says something about how the Macs are very sexy.
Very sexy. Yes.
So. I mean, yes, they're heaping these praises on the Mac and then turning around and buying low-end PC laptops.
Right. Of course, you know, what they're not saying is the fact that, you know, I think Lauren got a 17-inch laptop with a resolution that's, you know, this roughly the same as Apple's 13-inch. And, you know, everything's going right. Garbage on that. Yeah, they're leaving out all those details, but I don't really think I don't think they're hiding anything by doing that, and of course they shouldn't point that out. I don't know.
Well, pointing that out would be counterproductive to what the ads are supposed to be saying.
And right.
Yeah. And so I don't blame them for not touting what the actual specs of the machines are. And most people's eyes would glaze over anyhow, because you only have a few seconds to get your message out, and the message is not, look, these people just bought underpowered old technology machines.
Right, and these ads are not aimed at techies.
No, clearly they're not aimed at
techies. Not even a little bit.
Now,
so I don't know.
Now, see, I find it very interesting that Microsoft really makes a point not to talk about any of their own products. And they're showing they're showing people buying, in the first two ads, HP laptops, and then in the third ad, a Sony Vaio.
Right.
And they never mention Windows. They never talk about Microsoft Office. They don't mention any of their own products.
And you know, which is one of the things they took criticism for in the Seinfeld ads, which I will, for the record, again say that I thought were a great beginning to that campaign. and I'm in the minority there. And so I don't know, maybe they don't need to because they're mentioning the specific HP and Sony products, but I don't know. I think that they are successfully delivering a message that PCs are cheap.
Yes.
I question the value of doing so. When the ancillary of that is that they're, again, making Apple the aspirant item as opposed to, I don't think they're successfully billing the Mac as a product that is frivolous or a product that is too expensive. I think that they're just making it be the aspirant product.
Right. And if Microsoft is really going for the market of people that will just settle, okay, uh-huh. then maybe these ads will be very effective for that target audience. But I don't know. My Jedi instincts are telling me that in the long run, these ads probably won't do for Microsoft what they're hoping.
Yeah, probably not. But I don't even know how they could. I mean, you know, I've said for a while now. By the way, I think I'm using aspirant wrong. An aspirant usually refers to a person.
It sounds really good, so I'll let you slide.
Thank you. I think that what Microsoft is going to need is a fundamental shakeup in what they do and how they do it. And, you know, marketing isn't going to fix any of that. Otherwise, I think that they're going to become more and more of a competitor instead of a dominator, especially as netbooks and smartphones become more and more of a big deal, you know, looking out at the next 5-10 years, whatever other paradigm shifts come in to play.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point because Microsoft, well, their business model that they've been using historically, which is get into the enterprise and dominate and then get people to buy low-cost computers that aren't running anything from Apple. Okay, so they've done a very good job of saturating the market in that way. But I think one of the side effects of that is that Microsoft is now a company that cannot be nimble. And so they have to move at more of a glacial pace. Mm-hmm. And so as the rest of the market is sprinting around them, they're having to move in that slow way that a company their size does, and that may work against them. They may not be able to keep up with the product changes that are here already and will be coming over the next few months and couple years.
Yep. I agree, man.
And you can jump around the stage as much as you want, shouting developers, developers, developers.
Developers, 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 developers.
Yeah, I'm way too easy to entertain. But yeah, you can jump around the stage and shout developers as much as you want. But if you can't keep your company nimble enough to stay at least at the leading edge of the technology, at some point you will get left behind no matter how big you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So it's going to be, I don't know, it's fascinating to watch what Microsoft has become. I used to be just so furious at them for what they did to the computer market, all the damage that they were doing to the global economy in terms of worms and worms and viruses and whatnot, to bringing like entire companies down for a week at a time. And it's like every week for a couple of years we'd hear about how X billions of dollars in productivity were lost due to some Microsoft virus, and everything that they've done to competition, everything that they've done to slow down the pace of innovation, those things used to just infuriate me, And now when I think of Microsoft, I tend to sort of like, get a little pity glint in my eye.
Now, I don't know how true this story is. It's, you know, it's one of those things that, that I was told, saw on the internet, and so it must be true. But I was told somewhere along the way that that when Windows NT was the big thing for Microsoft, that's what was running the nuclear submarines in the U.S. Navy.
Oh yeah,
and that if you would do something, if you would run a calculation that would divide by zero, it would crash everything. And there was
it was the destroyer that was brought down.
Yeah, yeah, and there was no way for the people on the ship to reboot the systems. They had to have some specialist come do it. So whenever you'd have a submarine, that they'd have a divide by zero error, and it would crash the machine. It'd just be sitting there, and they'd have to send out tugs to drag it back in to dock so that they could reboot all the systems. And so the submarine captains would refer to Windows NT as Windows Needs Towing.
That's funny, sort of, in a scary, frustrating kind of way.
Yeah.
And on scary and frustrating, do we have anything to talk about on the iTunes DRM price hike thing?
I can sum up my feelings on the iTunes price hike thing probably pretty close to 140 characters.
Okay. Tweet away.
All right. So here's my Audible tweet. DRM gone good, price hikes bad.
Fair enough.
And there you go. How about that? We've just started a new trend, Audible tweeting.
Audible tweeting.
I know someone out there is actually going to transcribe my Audible tweet and count out the characters to make sure that I stayed under 140.
Yes, please do. Right. Please do. And I agree with you. DRM gone. Good, great, about damn time. Jacking up, I don't know. Our longtime listeners have heard me rant on and on about how I think digital download should be, you know, a quarter, 50 cents, a dime. I mean, they should be
but not
cheaper.
$1.29.
Not $1.29. 69 cents, good direction.
I mean,
just, you know, make the music cheaper, befitting the almost non-existent distribution costs. Sell more music.
That seems like a good business model to me.
There's too much competition for entertainment dollars. And this price hike for popular tracks of $1.29 or to $1.29 is just insane. It's just insane.
And, you know, there are far, far too many ways for the average user to get a hold of music, TV shows, movies, whatever, without paying for it. And of course, they're going to websites where people are pirating the content. But it's out there, and it's easy to get at. So if you want to compete with free, you need to compete in a way that makes your legit product more palatable. And raising the price, in my mind, is not the way to go about that.
No. Make the cost of downloading a song seem incidental. I mean, you know, $1.29, it's still not like it's a boatload of money or anything. But it's not as inconsequential a purchase as 69 cents.
No, it's not.
I'd probably stop yelling about 25 cent downloads if they actually went to 69 cents. And it drives me nuts, man. They're all a bunch of freaking idiots. They're all about, you know, it's the quote that I made up, and yes, I did make up that quote about the screwing the golden pooch that Steve gave us. I mean, the whole thing about, you know, Apple saying that 99 cents is the price target that people will buy for. The proof was in the pudding. The proof is in the pudding in the success of iTunes.
Absolutely. And even though 99 cents is more than we should have to pay for a music track, the fact that it was 99 cents hit one of those psychological barriers where it becomes very easy for people just to spend the money without thinking about it.
Right.
But once you bump up to that $129 price point, yes, it's still not a lot of money, but at least from my perspective, that changes the game psychologically. And now mm-hmm. where people would have, in many cases previously, just bought songs without even thinking about it because, dude, it's not even a dollar. Mm. Now they're going to think about it more because
mm-hmm. I think so. There's a line of demarcation there. That dollar price point is that line of demarcation. And I don't know. It being in the middle of a recession just makes it all the stupider. You know, admittedly, this has been in the works for a long time. It's been in the works longer than we've had, or at least that we've known that we've been in a recession. But it's just not smart. And the labels are they're stupid. They're just, I mean, how these people wake up in the morning and get out of bed without somehow accidentally killing themselves on a daily basis is beyond me.
Yeah, maybe there's a really high attrition rate in that market because people do accidentally kill themselves just climbing out of bed.
Maybe, man. Maybe. All right. Be that as it may, I don't think it's going to do anything to change iTunes. iTunes. No, that's funny. That's another show, folks. It's another show entirely.
Yes, it is.
One that would probably be a lot more lucrative, I might add. But I don't think this is going to change iTunes dominance. I imagine that the other websites that are competing in Amazon and, you know, whoever else, they're all going to be doing variable pricing. I think that it's going to slow the growth of digital music sales. I don't think it'll actually shrink it, but I think it'll slow the growth. And I think that's bad news.
It is. I mean, with as many companies out there that are fighting to stay afloat, mm-hmm. and the number of artists that are out there that are having to scrape for every penny they can get, and then mm-hmm. to have something like this happen, that's not bad just for consumers. It's also bad for the artists and for the market as a whole.
It's bad for everybody. Yeah. We all lose. We all lose with this, and I blame the labels. And it drives me nuts.
Is it safe to say screw you labels?
Screw you labels.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, we should work on that iTunes podcast though.
It would probably be pretty popular.
Yeah, probably would be. Although, man, we might have to hire some other people with better voices than us
that are a bit more sexy.
Or female.
Or female. That'd be a good start.
All right. Take us out, brother.
Okay. And on that note, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And please feel free to follow me on Twitter. You can find me at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Basses by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.